No, we were having a conversation here in the whole town, which is very interesting for me, because as Rebecca's bilingual Chinese, she can appreciate what those stories must have been like. And you said some very interesting things about the difference between Chinese and Japanese and European languages. I'd like to tell everybody else.
Okay, so I don't know where to begin.
Well, you said about they're very different because.
Yeah, because you think very differently.
It's more a kind of picture.
Yeah, so now I remember. So there is a term in Chinese which means, kind of means understanding the scenery. But then the word understanding is not quite right because it's almost like a feeling. And they use it a lot when you look at like Chinese paintings or when you read some kind of Chinese poetry. You don't try to dissect it and understand every single sentence or character. You just kind of approach the painting in a sort of almost like a distant kind of, you kind of feel the painting rather than trying to kind of go into the details. And I find that it's, you know, after we started studying the Shobo Genzo, I feel like it's very similar. It's like you're not trying to kind of get into the details of everything and trying to understand every single word, but rather just seeing the whole picture. And it's not an intellectual thing or a verbal thing. It's something that you feel. Internally. And everyone has a different interpretation of it because it's quite open. I guess it differs because of everyone has different experiences, life experiences, so they would maybe interpret it from their own point of view, from their own experiences. That makes sense.
Yeah. It was interesting because my teacher used to say the Shobo Genzo is like a very large picture, canvas, and each chapter is like a bit of a detail on the canvas. This all came out of talking about shaded eyes, didn't it?
Yes.
Because Rebecca wanted to know what the characters were for shaded eyes, which in Chinese have got very, very different meanings.
And in the modern day Chinese, sometimes they use the term, they add fire in front of shaded eyes. So it means you're so angry that the emotions are like so overwhelming that you can't see things in
really?
A kind of rational way. So you're kind of like overwhelmed with anger. And they use that term a lot, like fire shaded eyes.
Like seeing red. It's like seeing red.
Mm.
Well, we have similar expression in Russian, "oslepленной яростью," which literally translates like you're blind from anger.
Mm. But yeah, so they use that word like shaded eyes.
But we came up with some alternative phrases. For instance, diverting my gaze, shading my eyes. It suggests what we're just talking about, rather than dissecting, which is piercing holes, to kind of shade your eyes while you're looking at it, to look at it at the corner of your eye, or divert your, or mask your vision, or something like that. We can't come up with a deficient.
I think the shade, the word shaded, also can mean umbrella. So I think in the olden days they had, like, people used to hold an umbrella to sort of like block the sun. And I don't know if maybe that's also related to it. So you're kind of under.
In the shade.
Yeah, in the shade. Because the umbrella blocks the sun.
But that, talking about that and the kanji for that led on to how in Eastern languages you appreciate a text.
Mm.
Like a picture. So there's not that focus which we have. Well, what does that mean? Well, why does it say can? You know, we want to know every little joining bit. We're very sensitive to the words, very, very sensitive, compared with Japanese and Chinese, which is almost very loose. One of the things I found when I learnt Japanese was can put the sentence together very loosely, and people don't mind whether you put an and an or a but in almost. What? What's the matter with these people? But that's the way it is. And in Chinese, it's even worse, isn't it, in a way? Because you just have substantive nouns blocked together.
Yeah.
And you have to join them together yourself, almost.
Yeah, and with the sort of shaded eyes, it's not like whether I put my hand in front of my eyes or someone else did. It, there's no subject, you know, so you kind of have to guess from the sentence what it means.
No, a lot of scope for misunderstanding, though, of people just interpreting things differently. I mean,
yes.
That's one thing we're sort of trying to interpret old texts, but just in terms of modern usage of things
but
you need to use text for, I mean, don't you need to be clear about?
Well, it's interesting, I don't know about in Chinese, but in Japanese, clarity comes through interaction. So you have a conversation, and the conversation is interactive. Whereas in Western languages, we transmit parcels of information. So I say something, a parcel of information, I pass it over to you, you understand it, and then you give a parcel back. So, but in Japanese at least, you send a little bit and you get, it's rather like telecommunications. You get an acknowledgement back, and maybe a questioning word, and then you say a bit more. So it comes out of the interaction. Which I found, I don't know if that's the same in Chinese.
Yeah, and also you use certain, you know, the way you say things, you use it a lot, so you kind of immediately understand. You know, unless you say something really, like, sort of just abstract, then most people will understand what you're trying to say. They wouldn't.
They guess the context.
Yeah,
yeah. They intuit the context.
Yes, yes.
Because they're in the same culture.
Yes.
So Plato also said that the way to arrive at truth is through dialectic, not rhetoric.
Yes.
So if you make a statement, rhetoric, then it's not clear.
Yes.
If you have dialectic, then
yes.
Then you can.
Yes,
rhetoric.
We've interpreted dialectic also in a parcel way, but maybe true dialectic may be by that.
So in Japanese you have hiragana, which is often used for like and but, and also plurals. But Chinese only has kanji.
Mm.
How do you
conjugate
all the different things together or put the plurals? I don't understand that.
Mm.
How do you make the future tense of a verb, for instance?
You say something like tomorrow, I go to blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I go to the supermarket.
Yeah. So the verb is still
the same.
What we call the present tense.
Yes, but so you just add tomorrow or yesterday.
Oh, I see. So
I
go
to the supermarket already.
What about things like the and that, like articles? How are they?
Don't need those.
I just don't bother with them.
Yeah, you do have it, but it's not
essential.
Yeah, it's not essential.
Mm.
I mean, of course, you have those words, but I mean, those characters, but.
Because hiragana is quite useful for children to learn kanji because they can put the hiragana above it and then the kids can read it and then find out what the kanji means. Whereas in China, it's just much more complicated because you just have to know the kanji or...
I find Chinese like easier than Japanese because I know Japanese as well, but I find that there's... Yeah, because you have to learn the hiragana and katakana.
But
you
know,
you have to learn more.
Another alphabet to conjugate
But no, once you know the hiragana, you can pick up the meanings of the kanji, is what I'm trying to say.
No, it's different, right? I mean, you have to learn separately the kanji. When you learn Japanese.
But the kanji is there and then the hiragana is above it.
It can tell you how to read it, yeah.
It can tell you the meaning of it. Do you know what I mean?
It tells you how to read it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always tell you the meaning because there's so many homonyms.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
So you have to learn that as well.
But
as
it helps, doesn't it? No?
I mean, Japanese or Chinese?
In Japanese. I don't know. I'm just speaking
anyway,
from ignorance of Chinese, sorry.
Interesting thing is that it might shed some light on the way we might read Koan stories or Shobu Genzo chapters and the way they might be read by a native speaker in the original. Very different.
Mm-hmm.
So my teacher, Ishijima, used to give lectures on the Shobu Genzo in Japanese. And the Shobu Genzo contains sentences. It's medieval Japanese, so it's a little bit difficult for modern people. There would be words that are not used now, or verb forms, just like there are in English. In truth, he hath it, you know, it's not modern English. The same, but you can get past that without too much difficulty. And he taught the Shobu Genzo in his own language, and I went to some of the lectures, not all of them, over the years, and I didn't notice people focusing in the same way that we do on the meaning. Now that's partly because maybe the meaning was clearer, but not only that, partly because it was not so important to get the literal meaning clear. It's not an important thing. That sounds really weird, but it's true.
And what about if you're sort of signing a contract or something?
Well, I don't know about China, but contracts have never been important.
Yeah, they're not that important, actually. They don't even like you look at
the
contracts.
It's like the old days in Europe when you seal a bargain. Yeah. Well, no. Talking.
What sort of questions people ask during those lectures on Shobu Genzo?
Oh, for examples
of
how Dogen's teaching applied to daily life, or maybe questions about the meaning of the old kanji. So what that would mean, just as if, for instance, in English we were discussing Shakespeare, people might say, well, we don't use that phrase anymore, that's some kind of metaphor, can you explain that metaphor, something like that. So one thing you might be able to appreciate is it's okay to shade your eyes when you're reading a Koan story, for example, and to say, oh, okay, just kind of glance at the meaning, and take the meaning which comes to you from somewhere. If it doesn't make any sense, then that's a problem, of course, because, so what do you do about that? Well, you could just close the book, which is a nice thing about the Koan book. You can close it and then open it again. But a meaning will come to you if you just divert your gaze onto the words. A simple meaning, because they're simple stories, because they're conversations. They're not philosophical treaties, they're just what people said to each other. Take that first meaning as the kind of colouring in the picture and see how you get on. See if it helps. It's a problem. And I was saying to Rebecca, I stopped giving Shobel Genzo workshops in Scotland because I found it too difficult to bridge the gap between what I knew the Japanese was like and these people who were coming and wanted to understand what was written in English. And I did my best, but after about 4 years giving workshops, I found it just too difficult. I stopped. I didn't know how to bridge that gap. Well, if you'd been there, you could have joined in. It would have helped. One way I found did help was, instead of giving that kind of workshop, I started going through chapters from the Japanese original. And even though people didn't understand Japanese or Chinese, if I said this little square can mean these three things, it's a noun. This little squiggle means something, and this little squiggle means something, this little squiggle means something. This is a joining word, you know. And then there you are, you've got all the words, now put them together into a well-known phrase or saying. And then people would suddenly started to realise, oh, I see. So really, we've been trying to get the meaning out of something which is very different. So people slowly began to appreciate it. But it's a long task. So sadly, the Shobel Genzo isn't something you can kind of pick up and read a couple of chapters and, okay, I got that, read the next one, okay, I got that, I'll go on to the next book. Oh no, I understand it all. But if you divert your gaze, if you hood your eyes when you're reading it, you get some taste. And if you keep doing that, keep doing it, that taste or flavour becomes clearer. Just like you're looking at a huge canvas and you're looking at this bit here and you're, it's nice bit of shape, doing a jigsaw puzzle, you know, could be that. And then you go on to another bit, and then you go on to another bit, and then after 10 years maybe, something's appearing in my consciousness. I seem to be understanding it. Strange, I didn't know I was understanding it. I didn't realise. But it won't happen in 5 years. It might happen in 10. It could happen if you're very diligent in 5 years, I suppose.
So, say, we continue reading Shobel Genzo at our Wednesday sittings on a weekly basis.
Yes.
And the way it goes now, we read a paragraph, and then we have a discussion, and quite often we don't know what to say. We should just be laughing at the very best.
Well, it's okay. Enjoy it.
So, is that the way to go with it? So, I mean, if we clearly stuck and don't know what it is about,
I don't really know because you haven't got anybody there who knows what the original is like. So you have to just enjoy it and do your best. You're a group of people and you've got this vast canvas and you're looking down here.
Hmm.
Well, if you keep looking and then look here and here, something will be clarified, I'm sure. But it won't be clarified this week or next week. So, that's the situation.
You were doing some sort of interpretive translations at one time.
Yes.
I mean, are you still...
No, I stopped.
Mm.
I did about 6 or 7 chapters, and then I stopped.
Because they were kind of more clearer than the sort of raw.
Well, yes, because the translation by my teacher and Mike Cross, who cooperated on the translation, they decided, or we decided, I was the editor and they were the translators, so we worked together. We decided that you either tried to make a translation which made sense to English speakers but missed the subtleties of Dogen's incredible play on language, or you tried to represent something about that, in which case it wasn't so easy to read. So you can't do both. So we decided that it was better to try and retain some of this crazy wordplay he uses, or kanji play. And there are other translations. Kazuaki Tanahashi has done a big translation recently, which is supposed to be much easier to read. My attempts at modern interpretations were just to try and move away from that more literal translation that's in the books.
The interesting thing is when I read Ishijima's translations, it's often the joining words that seem to cause the problem. Like, they'll say something positive and then there'll be a word that says but, or although,
yeah,
that's true, then it says this, and you think, well, now mathematically he's negated what he's just said before.
Yeah, well,
so
throw
if
them
I didn't
away,
have that
would,
bit, the two yeah. would kind of, that would make sense, and so would that, and then you can move on.
Yeah, but you know, the joining phrases in Japanese are vague.
Yeah,
there's one, soshite, which means and, but.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's useful to know that it might not be as exact as it seems
yes.
to be in English. Yeah.
Yes, it isn't as exact.
Yeah.
That's why those languages are so good at poetic expression.
Yeah.
So that's the situation, I'm afraid.
Well, I guess those 6 chapters that already have your commentaries will probably keep us occupied for the next
I think Brad's doing them too, isn't he? He'll probably carry on.
Interpretation.
Yeah, modern interpretations in his book.
Yeah, I've listened to Don't Be a Jerk and to the other one. Being Beyond the Zen? Or
the following one.
Yeah.
Well, it's interpreting.
The magic is taken away.
Oh.
No, seriously. It is easy easier to understand, but it's no longer Shippuden's. And certain bits just annoy me when he substitutes original Japanese examples of real life with something like Burger Fry or something. Well, there is no need. I'm not stupid. I would understand a reference to real life without bringing this American sort of.
There's nothing authentic about Chabogyan. The Pali canon is where the real thing is.
Well, anyway, what I'm saying that yes, it is easier, but sometimes.
But more important, more important than studying the Shobogenzo is to work out what it means for living. Because whatever Buddhism is about, it's not about the Shobogenzo or the history of Buddhism or what Gautama Buddha did on his cushion. It's about our life, my life, how to live.
But I think when you read the original and then you read yours or Brad's, eventually you can pick up a way to kind of interpret how the conveys things for yourself.
Yeah, because there are lots of standard phrases in Chinese.
Yeah, how he uses metaphors and poetry, and then can start to try and apply it to other bits of his writing.
Yes. But it's not a quick job.
No,
no, I don't find it working like that.
Mm.
I don't see the pattern at all.
Yeah.
But that's what studying Dogen is like. But Rebecca has sorted it all out.
I wish.
We keep saying, who translated this? Oh, it was Mike.
So if you think differently according to which language you're using, how do you know which one is right?
Absolutely. And this is something that I drove me mad when I first went to Japan. After a few years, I found that people thought in different ways, and I thought, strange people, they don't know what's right at all. And then after another 10 years I realised that there's 100 million of them around me, and I couldn't just be right and they could all be wrong. So I gradually realised that I should look at the word right a bit more closely. And I've never looked back.
You say sort of the meaning of language is very much on sort of context and cultural context. I mean, do you think as an outsider you could ever really fully be at home in that? Did you feel that after sort of 20 years, however long it was? I mean, I'm just thinking, I mean, if that's...
Can you be at home in two languages that's so different? Is that what you mean?
I was thinking, can you be, if you as a European in Japan, going there as an adult, would you ever get to a stage where you
me?
Felt,
yes.
You felt you're entirely at home, and you picked up
yes.
all the nuances and everything?
Yes. But it's a different part of my brain. I'm convinced it felt like it came from a different part somewhere. And my character is different.
Well, I was thinking about Rebecca was talking about how to look at the writing. I think it was a picture. It's supposed to be like the left hemisphere in the brain is the language, as the Western language is, that it's linear and the numbers. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the right part of your brain is pictorial, is graphic. So you take the whole.
Mm.
So that's why maybe you felt like you were using one side or the other.
Yes, not as clearly as one side of my brain, but something different, coming from some different place.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in China and you speak Chinese, do you feel like a bit different person?
I don't think the same way when I talk. The way I construct like a sentence is completely different. It's almost, it's like I use a different part of my brain to like communicate. And I read an article, I was telling you, that they did a study on a bilingual Chinese person, and they sort of looked at the brain, and when the person was speaking in Chinese, the right side of the brain was quite active because it's like a visual, because Chinese language is very visual. So that was more active. Whereas if you just speak in English, that side is kind of a bit, it's not so active. But when the person spoke in Chinese, they used that part of the brain a lot, the right side.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, probably true.
Mm.
probably. Is there any such thing as dyslexia in China and Japan? I think I've read that it doesn't really exist so much because it's more just pictorial.
Yeah,
right. And it's
You basically memorise
the characters, so
rather than
you can
kind
have like
of
bad
reading.
Memory.
It's amazing,
you
isn't it?
Remember.
However, coming back to Hal's point, in technical literature, it's a disaster. Japanese is a bit of a disaster, so they tend to write in English.
How's that one there?
Because there's no singular, no plural, no subject.
Mm.
You know, how do you describe something accurately?
How everything works then?
What?
How everything works.
They talk
because of the difference between doing and thinking and writing.
Isn't that true? They talk round and round the subject and then you're supposed to intuit what's in the middle of it?
Yeah.
Is that not right?
Yeah.
I think so. They can waffle on for ages about the same thing without ever getting to the
point. Not the Chinese. Chinese are very different. They're very direct.
Oh,
<It's>
right.
You can even tell by the expression on the face.
Paul has intimate knowledge of relationships with Japanese. running circles.
Yeah, Chinese is completely different.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Has the language kind of evolved over the structure has evolved over the years, I mean, just to meet the different needs of the societies. I mean, it's a highly developed sort of capitalist economy now. You think you need to have a kind of language you can sort of deal with the complexities of that. And it's fine, it sounds lovely, all this sort of poetic kind of visual stuff, but as you say, like, yeah, trying to
hardwire. I don't know about Japanese evolved by bringing in loan words from European languages. So, certainly in technical fields, I mean, it's almost English with Japanese verbs.
Yeah, Chinese
really
like computer. So the Chinese, it's quite a modern word, right? So they would say electrical brain. So that's how they would translate. So that's how they translate, like, computer. And so again, you know, it's very different, you know, just...
Whereas the Japanese have just put, using their phonetic alphabet, computer.
Mm.
So they just adopted the loan words
mm.
directly. So that's the gap we're dealing with. So you have to find your own. We have to find our own solutions, really. How to deal with that gap? Have you read the Tanahashi translation at all? Anybody read? Was supposed to be much easier to read.
But Hidarma was lucky that he wasn't a scholar, because he like tried to take it from Sanskrit and to explain it to Chinese people who think in Chinese must have been very hard. He was lucky he wasn't into books. Much.
So when things like the story in Kankin, when the texts criticize people for boring holes in the sutras in their eyes, what do you think is the behavior that they're criticizing? Because it's not then the behavior that we might be criticized for indulging in, is it? It's
no.
Different.
Yes.
What do you think it is? That they're critiquing.
Well, in that story, I think it's a bit of a humorous criticism. If we assume that what the master's saying is I'm just resting, diverting my gaze. I'm just scanning it out of the corner of my eye, or whatever we come up with. And what the student wants to do isn't to do that. He wants to get hold of the sutras, which the master has told him not to. He told all the students, no, you mustn't read sutras. So when the master says, I'm just doing what I'm doing, lightly resting my eyes on the surface of the scroll, the student asks if he can do it. But what he's asking to do is not to be able to rest his eyes, but to get at the sutra. And the master says, no, you can't, because if I let you get at the sutra, you'll do what I'm not doing. That is, you'll pierce it. But we can then say, well, haven't we just been talking about Japanese don't pierce the sutra? Well, of course, we're only talking, aren't we? So if you're very, very keen to understand anything, whether you're Chinese, Japanese, English or Russian, you're going to try and get it, aren't you? You're going to want to understand it. That's the best I can do. You have another idea.
You have to pay for it.
The next book.
But I wonder if it's, you know, quite often if you're that student has actually got a master already, and that master is guiding that student's practice in Zen. So for a student to want to go and learn and read and other things might not be what the master's giving him what the master thinks he needs at that moment. And the student wants to go and explore all other things. It's not really, we get it in karate where people want to learn stuff that's not appropriate for them at that time.
Yeah.
And they're always looking out for other things, and you think, just do this for a few more months and then until you get it right fundamentally, and then you can move on to the next thing.
Yes, want to know everything in the beginning, isn't
it? Yeah, it's not helpful at all.
That's nice.
I'm not very familiar with the history of religion, but I seem to have heard or read somewhere that in Orthodox Russian church there was the time when ordinary people were not allowed to read Bible. In fact, it was printed only in languages ordinary people would not understand, like Latin, for example, or Greek or something. And that was exactly for the reason that ordinary person from the street would not understand it correctly. So to avoid any misinterpretation, the whole society, effectively, apart from those clergy.
That could be connected with setting up a hierarchy of knowledge, couldn't it?
Yeah, that was my meaning. That's what I'm trying to say. How do you decide? Okay, with karate, you probably can, on physical level, you probably can see when person is ready. Maybe this young student was another Dogen, who very valid question at the age of 13.
He had guidance until he was ready to go out and he went and studied with people.
Anyway, knowledge shouldn't be
restricted.
Yes.
But you don't just walk into a library and start taking one book off and read it, and then you need some sort of guidance.
Do you?
Yeah.
people over the years have asked me, can you recommend any books to read?
Mm.
And I never know what to say. I'm not doing it. I'm not saying no, don't read any books. I don't know what to say, because I know that reading lots of books on Buddhism confuses people. But it's useless me saying that to somebody who wants to read lots of books on Buddhism. So I don't know, really. Read our books, and that's it. And also, I'm not the person to ask, because I've only studied one thing with one teacher. That's all I've done. So I know bugger all about anything else, really. But anyway.
The Reformation in Europe was about rejecting the hierarchy, wasn't it? I'm an expert on that.
Was it?
It was a reaction against the Catholic Church controlling knowledge. Martin Luther saying this should be open to everyone and should be available to everyone. I'm looking at Janet.
Yeah, that's one narrative.
Okay, what's the other narrative?
But if, okay, well, that's getting to the point of it, isn't it? That is one narrative. So from the Catholic Church's side, there's one narrative. From the Protestant Church's side, there's one narrative. The same thing happened, and there are dozens of different narratives.
Yeah.
So, with
on every single event,
on every single event in history, there are dozens of narratives.
Yes.
Yeah. And none of them are right. So,
let's all slit our throats now.
Well, none of them are complete.
None of them are complete.
But it's only just like saying there are lots of models in science, but none of them are absolute.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
So, in fact, I think Einstein had a real problem with quantum physics. So, after his wonderful discovery, he really didn't get on with quantum physics at all. So he had burnt holes in whatever he burnt holes in for relativity. So much so that he couldn't deal with quantum physics.
Do I have to learn to be flexible then?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try.
People take text study very seriously in Judaism. It takes you 3 years to read the whole of Talmud, and there's this program called Daf Yomi. Every day you read a specific page. It's like one page a day. Like anywhere you are in the world, you can find a group of people who like read that page of you because they're all like on the same page, literally. You just do it. Like, at least once in your life, you're supposed to do it. You should do it, you know, page a day. It'll be done in 3 years. It's crazy, though. Like 2 hours every day.
They read it in unison.
Of arguing with somebody about it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, like you debate it in a group.
Okay.
What it means.
But, you know, if you go back to what Dogen writes and what other masters have said, it's not practice zazen and study the Shobo Genzo, it's practice zazen and study the sutras. So what are the sutras? According to Dogen, that stovepipe could be a sutra. So, you know, don't get hung up on the Shobo Genzo, really. Although Soto Zen is supposed to be, you know, focused on Dogen, Dogen wasn't focused on Dogen. And it's easy to become, you know, focused on Dogen and forget that it's study. So don't limit the study. The truth doesn't, Dogen again says, the truth doesn't exist in a particular place. He says that the truth is on rocks, trees and nature, and truth is everywhere. Well, everywhere means in other religions, maybe, other places, other ideas, other beliefs. Maybe some of them are true. Oh, wow.
Could you personally have done better than spending years translating the Shobo Genzo?
Who?
You.
probably not. I didn't translate it, I edited it and published it. I don't know, really. I didn't plan to do it, and I just kind of did it. So what could I have done if I hadn't done that? I don't know. It's hypothetical question, isn't it, really?
Why did Bodhidharma go to China?
Yes. You do what comes what you're presented with, really, don't you? Or you don't do it, and then you present it with something else. Or the same thing again in a different vein. Oh, got some time left. I'd just like to say, Paul, you were asking about samadhi,
yeah,
and kensho.
Yeah.
When you said samadhi, did you mean satori? Because kensho and satori.
I thought kensho is satori.
Oh, okay. So you meant samadhi?
Well, I was asking about both, really.
Okay.
Which, as in the definite experience, which is not just an instant, which you're not aware of, but something that goes
lasting
on for half an hour or an hour or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, these things happen, don't they?
I've heard of somebody
oh, come
who.
On. Come on!
Everything only happens now. You can feel happy and peaceful at 1 minute and depressed soon after. You can go on a retreat for 3 days and feel settled and balanced. Go home, go out for a drink, go to work, and the next day you feel as wound up as ever.
That's true.
However, if we practice balance and continue practicing balance, well, when I say practice balance, you could say practice zazen, but I think it should be wider than that. If you practice something that balances your body and mind and makes you whole, and you keep on practicing it, you master it. And to master something isn't, it doesn't have some special secret spiritual meaning. There are master carpenters, master potters, master
swimmers.
Yeah. Somebody who's continued doing something again and again and again and again and again over a period of years knows what it is they're doing. And that knowledge is not information. It's just that you know what it is you're doing. So if you practice balance, whether it be as an athlete or as a Zen practitioner, for many years, you slowly realise what it is you're doing. And when you realise what it is you're doing, the clear space between the clouds that I've been talking about, when you feel at peace, doesn't matter anymore. It doesn't matter if it's cloudy or clear.
Mm.
And I can't tell you why, but that happens. So there is a poem by a Chinese monk called Hotei, which I can't quote exactly, but it says something like, when my mind is clear, I let my mind be clear. When my mind is cloudy, I let it be cloudy.
Mm.
Something like that. And what he's saying is, I've mastered practicing balance. And I suppose it's true for athletes and artists and people who pursue one practice for many years. It then doesn't matter whether you have an up day or a down day in the same way.
Yeah.
My ex-partner Lisa is a top potter. She's a master potter, she really is. She goes up and down all around the place, but she's a master potter. She can make a pot whether she's up or down,
yeah,
and the pot is her.
Sure, it's expressing yourself at that
expressing
moment.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So if you practice balance for a long time, it ceases. You cease to be worried whether you feel balanced or don't feel balanced, whether you're happy or sad. None of those things matter because of something else. Now, that something else can't have a name. You can call it being in tune with the universe, or finding your real self. Or you could call it enlightenment. The problem with enlightenment is it's a horrible word.
Yeah.
So Dogen says your first zazen is the same, and it is true. So I've been practicing zazen every day for 40 years, but my zazen is no different to anybody else's here. But I've mastered it. That's the only difference. And the reason I mastered it is because I kept doing it every day, every day, every day, every day.
Mm.
It's not something special. You don't have to be clever. You just have to continue doing it. And you must know that you're a painter.
Yeah, sure.
You cease to learn technique. The technique is part of you.
Yeah, long since forgotten about, so I don't think I ever bothered with technique anyway.
You've long since forgotten about it.
Well, no, I didn't even bother about it, I just followed my intuition.
There we are then. You're a master
painter.
Which
is a kind of skill in itself.
Yes, it is.
Quite often, the opinion expressed that people can sit on the cushion for hours and days and years at the end and get and think they are doing something and they do not. my Tai Chi teacher in particular, he just likes to contrast Tai Chi, which is meditation and movement, to sitting meditation. And he said, those Zen people sitting telling themselves to shut up and shut up, shut up, shut up. You can't do that. It's not. And
if he's a master Tai Chi teacher, he will recognise.
He does, but in a humorous way.
Oh, in a humorous
way,
okay.
Yeah, sometimes. But even the humorous way is still kind of provokes this pondering this question, like, am I still doing zazen or am I just sitting there, you know?
You'll never know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a bit like, I like what you are saying, that it's the same zazen, the first one, the last one. I prefer this way, you know, that there is no perfection. But at the same time, is it definitely not just a waste of time?
Well, the doubt is important, so
yeah.
Carry that doubt with you.
Yeah, and it doesn't go away somehow.
That's good.
Carry the doubt with you, it's just doubt.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite to, what's the opposite to doubt?
Certainty.
Is it? Well, you know, who wants certainty? We've got lots of certainty, haven't we? I don't want certainty. So if you have a bit of doubt as well, it's nice. Am I doing the right? Am I wasting my life? I still think that sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very reassuring.
Quite often. Quite often recently. Yeah. What am I doing? Must be crazy. But I learned to follow myself. But God knows whether that's what I should be doing or not. I don't know. But even though I don't know, I'm doing it. So I'm following my life even I don't know where it's going. And that's true for everybody. We cover that up. None of us know where we're going. And we're going there, even though we don't know. And while we're thinking we know where we're going and thinking where we want to go, our life is gently taking us forward anyway. And that's the way things are. So it's rather a nice way to live, there's many alternative ways to live, but one nice way to live may be to learn to trust whatever it is that's taking you forward and follow it. You can call it what you like. Call it God.
The force.
Why not?
The force.
Call it prajna.
Oh,
Oh, yes, I like this.
sounds mysterious.
But if you choose to live like that, like this, then life is not particularly easy. And you can't expect to be famous or make a lot of money. Which is why Buddhism has this thing about don't pursue fame or profit. I'd rather say if you follow the Buddha way, you won't be pursuing fame or profit. Although it may happen to you, you won't pursue it. Not don't pursue it. You won't be doing that. You'll be pursuing something else. And what that is, I've no idea.
Truth. View for truth, you said.
Yeah, truth. Yeah, that's what it is. I forgot. It doesn't need a name, but it needs to be followed. So that means doing, not thinking. So to take steps. Not to think about taking steps and then take them, just to simply take the steps.
That's the same as why sit zazen, people say. But the answer is just to sit zazen.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between that and just simply being complacent? Just saying I'm okay as I am, and then that's just an idea in your head. What you're talking about is surely not that, is it?
No.
What's the difference?
I don't know, because I'm not complacent, so I can't compare myself. You mean theoretically?
Yeah, I'm not saying you're complacent. I'm not attacking you, but I'm just saying that how do you know that you're not just being complacent and...
Because I'm not complacent.
Nihilist.
As far as I know what the meaning of complacent is, I'm not. It's not a difficult thing to decide. Are you complacent?
I don't think so.
No, well, there you are then, to answer your question.
Yeah, I'm asking it theoretically, I guess.
Oh, in theory.
Coming all the way here and sitting there for all those hours is quite a challenge. It's not a complacent thing. It's quite difficult.
No, I'm talking about the idea by sitting,
used to drive him nuts.
You are already enlightened.
Drive Seneca nuts?
No, don't go.
I'm
not talking
about the activity.
He went away to do some teaching with some lay people when he came back. People have been doing all this complacency stuff and he was so furious. Chuck them out and burn their tatami mats that they've been sitting on.
Really?
Yeah.
You have privileged information.
Yeah, well, you see.
What is it?
Dogen talks about the
troublemaker.
The Seneca heresy.
Can't help it.
And I was just saying, I think what
Seneca
what
is criticised right at the beginning of the Shobo Genzo.
Yeah, that's right. Because he inherited some followers from the something school.
Dogen did.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these people came over to his
that's
temple.
That's right, and they brought with them that kind of complacency, didn't they? That sense that actually we
don't need to do anything.
We don't need to do anything at all. And so exactly, I think what you're referring to...
So I missed the first bit,
Dogen calls this the Seneca heresy.
Right.
And quite early on, he inherited a whole bunch of people who'd been following... another teaching.
He built a Heiji out in the sticks.
When they came
and joined
him.
All these people came and joined his
And
game.
They brought with them that kind of view, that actually we don't need to do anything and it's all right as it is. So complacency. And he's hugely opposed to it.
Okay.
And I was recalling somewhere in the dim and distant past, reading a story of Dogen having been away, because he would go and teach some of his lay followers from time to time. And when he comes back, somebody has said or done something, and he's so furious that he chucks the monk out, and he cuts the tatami mat where this guy's cushion was out, and burns it. He's so angry. So I think he didn't like
did
he
do?
Didn't like complacency. I think he's the moral of the story.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's a good answer.
Yeah. It is something I've heard leveled from other sort of Buddhist schools at Zen that it's a bit kind of laissez-faire, that it's not, you're not trying hard enough, you should be sort of striving to be, you know, whatever, better people.
Oh yes, it's quite difficult, isn't it? If you're not complacent, should you try hard?
Yeah.
Well, then there's this thing about you shouldn't make intention, you shouldn't do anything intentionally. Oh, what? It's all very puzzling.
I just when at the very start of the show we're going to have a very little bit of it I've actually had to take in as well. That's what leads him on his, it's that question that leads him on his search, isn't it? That if everything is perfect as it is, why do
yes.
we practice?
Yes.
Well, then he says, if there's an inch, as much of an inch or what it is between yourself and reality, it's as wide as if
heaven and earth are separate.
Earth itself, yeah.
Mm.
Well, you know, if you want to walk the tightrope, you've got to practice. You can't walk on a tightrope without practicing. So, living in the balanced state is walking on a tightrope, in a way. I like to think of it like that.
I think it takes sort of exercise and diligence. It's just quite subtle.
Yes. So, if you try too hard, it doesn't work. If you don't try hard enough, it doesn't work. But isn't that true of everything? If you're training for something, you try too hard, it doesn't work, does it? Karate.
You overtrain and get worse results. If you don't get the balance of training right, and because you've got to recover in between.
If you're too enthusiastic, it works against you.
And if you try and learn too many things, you don't learn one thing properly.
Mm.
So, it's all comes back to the middle way. The middle way, not as a abstract teaching, but meaning the middle between extremes. So when you do something, it's in the middle. So don't try too hard, don't be complacent. And as I often say, being in the middle is not a perfect state. To be in the middle, you have to wobble. So, and I like the, that's why I like the tightrope analogy, because to walk on a tightrope, you must wobble. To ride a bicycle, you must wobble. Otherwise, you don't have balance. So balance, in reality, is wobbling. But in our minds, balance is perfect. So I should be perfectly balanced. I've been practicing Zazen all weekend. Nothing should go wrong. That's bollocks. Because in order to be balanced, you have to go a bit this way, but that way. A bit up, a bit down, a bit cheerful, a bit sad. And the balance comes out of that wobble. That's real situation. So it's called the middle way.
Interestingly, in the course of my studying, there was mentioned similar thing about body, how body likes to be in the perfect, stable, balanced position, which is called homeostasis.
Homeostasis?
Yeah, if you have too much sugar in your blood, the body releases insulin and drop, and blood sugar drops. If there isn't too little, then another hormone released and it raises it, and it's like that all the time. It's not one state, it's very dynamic, always changing, always listening to what's happening and adjusting accordingly. So body already knows how to do that.
Yes.
The question is to bring mind